Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to Bundesliga for Beginners. I'm your host, Jamie Smith, and joining me are my co-host, Kevin DeVries, who you'll know from the EPL Roundtable podcast. That's on the same channel we're on. Jim Knight is back as well as our Bundesliga expert, in inverted commas, John McKenzie. We'll kick things off with the Friday night game this week, Freiburg against Leverkusen, another intrapod derby. Kev kicks off with this one.
Yeah, so obviously the mighty Leverkusen, all three of their matches that I've watched, we've won. So as you guys kind of alluded to on the last show, the one that I didn't see didn't happen in general. So 3-for-3 is what the Leverkusen lads have been with me. It was obviously a very, very tight affair. I thought Leverkusen probably deserved the lead after the first half, but in the second half, Freiburg were really pushing towards the end there, and I think Leverkusen were lucky to hang on to the 1-0 win. It was pretty level on balance, just the one moment of Havertz just toe-poking it past everybody for the goal is really all that ended up separating the teams on the scoreline. But yeah, it was my first time seeing Freiburg. It did give me, I know we talked a few weeks ago about them kind of being a Burnley analog. I did get flashbacks to that kind of play style, and much like Burnley, sorry, Jamie, there will be a couple of chances. And if Barnes or Chris Wood get on the end of it, then you tend to draw or win. And if they don't, then you end up losing. I think that that's kind of what happened to Freiburg, is they did have a couple of chances, and just neither of them settled, and obviously Havertz did.
Yeah, it's an interesting one for me. I was a little bit nervous when I saw the team sheets and I saw that Freiburg were lining up in a 4-4-2, which is what they'd played against Frankfurt the week before, and it hadn't been particularly good. It was a bit too rigid for my liking. And obviously, we'd seen a couple of defensive errors from Robin Koch and others to give up that 3-1 lead that they had midweek. I was quite pleased to see Robin Koch go into the midfield area. I thought he really made the difference. They didn't look quite so sort of obvious, maybe. They were just too structured, I thought, in the midweek game. And I thought actually did a really good job against Leverkusen. And I think that shows up well in the stats. I pointed out midweek that against Frankfurt, they'd given up 28 box shots. So 28 shots inside the box. And then they only allowed up 6 box shots against Leverkusen. And I think against a team of Leverkusen's capacity and obvious talent in going forward, I think that's a really good turnout for the book. So in many respects, it was one of those games where, I think I could see why Christian Streich, the manager, was angry at the end, because it was one where he'd done everything that he set out to do. And they'd created a couple of decent chances. I think if you looked at the XG overall, Freiburg actually were ahead, but it was very low XG scoring goal game anyway. But I think he'd done what he sets out to do, which is stop the other team from having good chances and then try and grab a couple of your own. And had Hurler scored that chance in the first half, I think they might have done their best to hold on. But yeah, it was a good game. It was an entertaining, I think, for the fans, but just because, like you said, it was a tight affair, it felt a bit like a chess game at times. But I think most people will probably have given up before the end. So, but yeah, good to see Freiburg playing so well against the team right at the top of the table.
I was wondering, do I get something for winning both intrapod derbies? Because I think, I guess you guys have the one left, but neither of you can catch up to me. So do I win the podcast, or?
You get to produce the podcast for the rest of the season.
And edit.
And edit, even when I'm not on. I get left out, and then I still have to do the work afterwards. Unbelievable.
Kai Havertz, the main man again then, Jim. It was no surprise to see Bayern talking about trying to sign him this weekend. Anyone who's any good in the Bundesliga, Bayern are just like, we'll have him.
Yeah, John's talked about the preference for Bayern of not only reducing the opposition's chances of winning the Bundesliga through buying their own players, but looking to that as their source of recruitment as well. Yeah, it was a very, very good finish, actually, I thought. I think the keeper might be a little bit disappointed just because it goes kind of through him a little bit. But I think that's what told in the end. As John mentioned, Freiburg actually created the better chances across the game as a whole. Granted, there weren't a whole lot of them, but I think Havertz just showed what he's all about and just continued this amazing run. I know he didn't score in midweek against Wolfsburg, but you know, he's back on the score sheet now, and that's what, 2, 4, 7 goals in 5 games, his last 5 league games, his last 5 games in all competitions, which is, you know, really amazing going. And considering he made a relatively slow start to the season, now to burn into double figures, and if he can carry that on to the end of the season, he could well be, you know, top of Bayern's. We talked about him being top of someone's scouting list for the end of the season, whenever that may be. But he would very much kind of be the kind of profile, I guess, of a player that Bayern might look to bring in, a young prospect with a German background. And, you know, I guess they've still got Lewandowski who would lead the line there, John, but do you think he'd be a potential transfer target for Bayern?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, it does follow the profile, as you've said, of what they do, which is pick up the talent in the league. And not only does that strengthen them, but it weakens their opponents. I guess the interesting question would be whether or not Kai Havertz would want to go to Bayern. Like you said, you know, Lewandowski is coming to the end of his career, but you have a similar sort of situation there as you have with Alec Nübel going to Bayern and to replace Manuel Neuer. Kind of think, well, yeah, you're going to take that route if you feel as though you might have a trajectory into the Bayern team, but if you don't feel as though you're going to make it in there, will that change things? I suppose Havertz can play elsewhere, he's quite flexible, but that team at the moment at Bayern it just seems quite settled. It just seems as though they've got a first team sort of ironed out for the next couple of seasons at least.
And not to overly defend a player on my beloved Leverkusen, but their manager did say that he thought it was unlikely that Havertz would be leaving Leverkusen this summer, in air quotes, because who knows when the coming transfer window will actually happen.
That's got to be taken into account. I think financially as well, Bayern obviously are the financial powerhouse of the Bundesliga, but traditionally they don't spend massive fees, do they? They spent a lot of money on Lucas Hernandez, but that was a bit of an outlier. They try and get people in for good value, and it seems like Leroy Sané is maybe going to be the priority for them in the next transfer window, whenever that is. Move on from Bayer Leverkusen now. I'm so glad Kev's back so that I can do my terrible, terrible club name pun. Borussia Mönchengladbach also winners this weekend, Jim. 4-1 at home to Union Berlin, and the strike pairing of Thuram and Plea, again, extremely impressive.
Yeah, I was impressed with Mönchengladbach because they seem to kind of take the game to Union more than we've seen them do recently. Like, they are a very attacking side, but they just kind of seem to be more, I don't know, they had more intent today. And like, having Thuram and Player up front just kind of caused no end of havoc, really. And they never really looked in any trouble. They kind of were 1-0 up within 20 minutes or so. A nice precision finish from Niehaus and or Norhaus, I guess. And then, yeah, Thuram and Player kind of took over, Player being the provider for Thuram's first goal and his second goal, actually. Thuram, I guess he's one of the kind of standout players since the Bundesliga came back, because he's just straight into his stride, and it just looks an absolute monster in front of goal. So he's another prospect, I guess, that we should be keeping an eye on. Again, I'm not fully au fait with the potential transfer dealings around Mönchengladbach, but he would certainly be a kind of player that were, I guess, was on people's radar. Yeah, and then Player managed to get on the score sheet himself, albeit a kind of like a, I'm not sure he definitely meant to put the ball where he did. He just kind of swung his leg at it, and I thought it might have hit his standing leg at one point, actually, on the first look. But I think he made a pretty clean connection and buried it in the bottom corner. Union threatened to mount a comeback, I'd say, just after half-time. Managed to come out of the traps a little bit quicker in the second half and get one back. But, yeah, then it just seemed like Mönchengladbach decided to put their foot on the accelerator a little bit more, got a goal back again within 10 minutes, and they never really looked in too much danger. So quite an impressive performance, and obviously back up to third in the league before RB Leipzig play to round off the match day. So still very much in the hunt for those Champions League places. And I guess depending on how Dortmund fare as well, they could be second place up for grabs potentially if Leipzig keep dropping points and Dortmund take their eyes off the prize at any point.
Yeah, back to winning ways after a couple of poor results. Gladbach, you could say they were glad to be back to winning ways. I wouldn't say that, obviously, because rubbish. John, what was your take on this one?
Yeah, really, really exciting game, I thought, in a lot of respects. It was nice to see Lars Stindl back. I thought he was really quite creative in the middle. They played a sort of 4-4-2 with a diamond. It was great seeing him back because he's obviously had that disappointment with playing for the German national team and everyone expecting him to go on and be big, but then sort of hitting a few injury worries for a while. And then obviously Neuhaus behind him. I just think that was a lovely formation. It worked really well. The front two up front it was almost like a throwback to a sort of 90s football, having two strikers like that. But great to see Gladbach just going through the French markets and picking up talent there, and it translating quite well into the Bundesliga, I thought.
Certainly seems to be working out for them. The flip side though, Kev, Union, we've seen poor at the back since the resumption, and again really just unable to cope with Gladbach. They're really in that relegation picture.
Yeah, I had heard some about Union before the season restarted and how they were kind of a hipster pick. And then, of course, we learned from John before the Berlin Derby, and it was like, oh, interesting. Maybe they'll kind of be an interesting plot line through the season. But it seems they just continue to tumble down and put in poor performance after poor performance. Jim, I think you popped in with a stat in the chat earlier today. On aggregate, since the restart, they've conceded 11 and scored just 2 goals. Not particularly ideal. Pretty embarrassing for Gladbach, if you ask me, that they conceded. But
that's the Gladbach way. They don't keep clean sheets, win, lose, or draw. They don't keep clean sheets. If they're going to win, it has to be to 1 or 2 rather than a clean sheet.
If you go to the team hotel, it's just sloppy beds everywhere. No clean sheets.
Yeah.
So pretty disappointed to not see a better effort from Union Berlin. But I guess this is a question that's better answered by John. Are they just not this good, or has this been more of a development post-postponement? Yeah, we'll just go with that.
I think it's fair to say to answer this question properly, it's fair to talk about the average player annual salary in the Bundesliga. So the annual salary this season in dollars ranges from $8 million per player at Bayern Munich down to $400,000 per player at Paderborn, and Union Berlin are the second from bottom there. So their players are on just under $700,000 a year, and it's just a huge. When you look at the discrepancy between the top and the bottom, it's just a huge gulf. And I think it's perhaps unfair to expect a team who are pulling like an average wage, which is much closer to the Championship than the Premier League, to really be able to compete at the same level. Interestingly enough, Freiburg are third from bottom on that table, which is a real testament of what a genius Christian Streich is. I just thought I'd get that in there. But I think a lot of it comes down to, it does just come down to this. I think they've had a good start to the season. Union, they pretty much almost confirmed their place next season. But I think that mixed with the big break and the coronavirus issues has just not helped them out really. But they've had some tough matches as well since the resumption. So I think that they will still hope that they can get enough points to just guarantee staying up.
So as it stands at the minute, they're 4 points clear of 16th, which is the relegation playoff place. The good news for my Augsburg boys is that Union got beat by so many that Augsburg went up a place in the league on goal difference. So that was helpful. Augsburg beaten again this weekend, unfortunately, went down 2-0 away to Hertha. Tight game, actually. I put it on about 20-odd minutes in, and the first thing that happened was Hertha scored. So I'll take full responsibility for that. Augsburg just don't really seem to carry a goal threat. I was really surprised looking at the top scorer charts that one of their players is actually in it. This guy, Niederlechner, I don't think I've seen him have a shot in all the Augsburg games that I've watched so far, he doesn't seem to pose any threat whatsoever. Yet apparently he scored 11 times in the league this season, so that's a bit strange. And if they're going to get away from the bottom 2/3, I think he's going to need to find some goals. The bottom of the table, though, John, it seems to be really open, apart from probably Paderborn, who we're going to come on to next. Werder Bremen have really put themselves in with a chance of staying up now.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting battle down at the bottom. And I think this is one of the good things about having that relegation spot as well. It does really make things more intriguing, because I think I don't know what the stats are on the relegation playoff battle, but it's very, very rare that the team in the Zweite Bundesliga will win that game. So you almost have a sort of safety net there if you're in 16th place. But it's been fascinating seeing some of the teams at the bottom playing well. You've mentioned Werder Bremen. They've been great since they came back. Düsseldorf as well, I think, have actually played remarkably well, albeit getting hammered the other day. But yeah, I reckon there's. I mean, even up to maybe Köln. Maybe Köln are just enough out of that. But Frankfurt are in that battle, and then you've mentioned Augsburg and Union and Mainz as well, who have a real chance of dropping down. So it's actually, despite the fact that Bayern have all but confirmed their championship status, both the Champions League spaces and the relegation spaces are still very much up for grabs.
Yeah, I think we've seen Paderborn in action on Sunday, Kev. It does seem like they're going to be cut off at the bottom, 6 points adrift of Werder now. So 9 points adrift of Mainz, who are the last safe team. And defensively against Dortmund, they just seem to go to pot eventually. They played quite well for the first half and then just started falling apart.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, that it seems like once teams go down, then they just capitulate and then the scorelines get kind of ridiculous. That was the case today. I don't know if people were still watching by the last goal, but how do you get a 2-on-1 in the final minutes of a match when you're already down by many, many goals?
Yeah, why are you even trying to score at that point?
Exactly. It just, like, are you trying to make the scoreline better because you're, like, empirically making it worse? I mean, Paderborn, first of all, pretty nice kit they had on today. Didn't mind it too much. But yeah, performance-wise, it doesn't look like they're in any kind of shape to work themselves out of the situation that they're in right now. Which is, just disappointing. It kind of feels like when we started the show, there were a lot of really interesting plot lines. Maybe Paderborn weren't one of them, but the relegation battle, to be sure. And it just kind of feels like all of them are kind of getting resolved a little early. But obviously, there's still some other teams kicking around, like your Augsburg boys, that could get dragged back into the thick of it, if you'll pardon the cliche. But yeah, for Paderborn, they really didn't put up much of a fight at all. I mean, in the first half, I guess it wasn't too bad, but once it started getting bad, it got real bad and fast.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, it is interesting. I wonder if this is part of the knock-on of being behind closed doors, that teams don't seem to have that resolve. They can't draw on the energy of the crowd. And yeah, once you've got a mismatch like this anyway, Paderborn had done really well to go into half-time at 0-0. But as soon as Dortmund started to sort of flex their muscle, it became extremely one-sided. One player who stood out in this one, Jim, was Jadon Sancho. We talked about being disappointed in the Clásico. Not really hit top form since the restart. He was obviously trying to get fully fit after the injury. But it looks like he's found some form now. 17 goals for the season.
Yeah, I think it's probably fair to say today was the first time he'd looked anything close to fully fit since the season resumed. He's kind of been a bit part player and a cameo appearance for Dortmund since the season resumed. And today he just looked like the Jadon Sancho that everyone believes is the next big thing in terms of a player moving back to the Premier League. And he, you know, Hazard may have started the scoring, but Sancho then just kind of took over. As you say, the last goal, the sixth goal for Dortmund was just, he was just clearing away. There was no one actually going to stop him. And as long as he could beat the keeper in a one-on-one, which the keeper's not especially motivated to try and keep that ball out at 5-1 anyway, then he's away. But yeah, I think he showed today, as we record, the kind of promise that people would have been expecting tuning into the Bundesliga as beginners, as we are, the majority of us. He would have been the first name on a lot of people's lists to look for when tuning into a Bundesliga game. So yeah, you know, it's obviously great to see him kick on and show some of that promise. And it just remains to be seen whether that's enough to then facilitate a move in the summer. But he looks unbelievable today. Again, you have to benchmark that against the team that Dortmund were playing, but you can only beat what's in front of you, and going out and netting a hat-trick in any top-flight game, you know, it has to be applauded. So he's absolutely flying for now, and it'll just be interesting to see whether he can kick on and whether he certainly looked fully over his injury doubts. So as long as he stays fit for the rest of the season, there could be plenty more goals coming his way, because Dortmund have got some tough games, but also some very, very winnable games as well. They've got Fortuna in a couple of weeks away, and that could be another big scoreline based on what we've seen this weekend, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think after the Clásico, we all assume that the title race is done. 7-point gap still after the weekend, and only a handful of games to go. But John, Dortmund need to prove that they're going to be the main challengers. And what really impressed me again this weekend was the way that the fullbacks get forward. Hakimi scored again. That's a couple for him since the restart. And even Marcel Schmelzer, the club legend, came off the bench and got on the score sheet right at the end. What a moment that was for him.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people were maybe unduly harsh on Dortmund after the Clásico, because there was sort of this expectation that, well, you know, you had this chance to win the league and you didn't really take it. But for me, I always think that Dortmund's downfall is that they don't win the games that they should be winning. And this is a game that they've not won in the past. And I mean, it was a tight game for a long stretch of time. So I think just seeing them sort of power away at the end was quite important. And I think that's what they need to become. They need to become that team who are going to get the job done against teams like Paderborn, where maybe the pressure's off a little bit because you expect to win. These are the sorts of games that they need to just sort of take by the scruff of the neck and sort them out and get them done. And as we saw, once that Paderborn had been broken and that third goal went in after the penalty, they sort of folded. And that's the sort of situations they need to be getting into, I think.
And a similar sort of story in the Bayern game earlier in the weekend, extending their winning streak 5-0 at home to Fortuna. Kev, another couple of goals for Robert Lewandowski. But what stood out for me about this Bayern team was just how ruthless they were. Even at 4-0, they were still pressing ferociously, forcing mistakes from the Fortuna defence and just trying to score as many goals as possible. There's no mercy at all in this team.
Yeah, it's probably the reason why they do win every match that they're supposed to, kind of in converse to what John was just saying about Borussia Dortmund, is there is just a lethality to them when they really get going. I actually had a thought about this. And I was like, should I bring it up? But I realized that when there's that kind of lopsided matchup in the Premier League, or even that kind of lopsided scoreline, as somebody that used to cover fantasy, there's at least that like small bit of joy watching a team that you don't like just pummel a random team like, I don't know, Watford or something like that. And you're like, well, you know, at least my captain Salah got two goals or something like that. And I realize that without that aspect, it really does just feel like the meme that you put out of like, they're already dead. Like, stop. This isn't benefiting anyone. I mean, obviously Bayern are just so, so good when they really get flowing. I was really impressed by Pavard. I know that he has had a pretty good time since moving to Bayern Munich, but obviously the goals don't hurt either, but just a very, very good player. But again, we've talked about this before. That's kind of the difference, is that Bayern have a good player at literally every position and have depth at most of them. So unsurprising that they're able to just put teams to the sword like this when they're really in their flow.
This seems to be almost that they're probably the best I've seen them since the resumption in this game. The third goal, I think it was, where...
was that Kimmich the double back right. heel?
Yeah, Kimmich got down the right back heel there, and then Muller sort of squared it for Lewandowski to finish. That was an outstanding goal. I don't think many teams could have stopped that. Jim, like Kev says, obviously a big golfing class between these two teams, but unstoppable certainly in the Bundesliga, and it makes you wonder if the treble could be on this season.
Well, yeah, obviously we're still waiting to hear exactly what's going to be going on with the Champions League in terms of that resuming because of the complexities of international travel and how that might affect the competition. But they seem to be gearing up to finishing the season on a real high, obviously pulling away at the top of the league after beating Dortmund in midweek. And like you said, they were just ruthless. And to be fair, Dusseldorf didn't help themselves. There was some comical defending going on. I mean, trying to play the ball out at the back when you're already 5-0 down nearly cost them a sixth goal. Yeah. That was only 15 minutes into the second half. Like, actually, and I think the Alphonso Davies, the fifth goal itself, was a perfect kind of encapsulation of just that. Just suicidal kind of defending. They just didn't want to clear their lines. They seemed absolutely set on passing the ball out, but that just involves more often than not just trying to boot the ball away but not really doing a good enough job of it. And when you've got players like Alphonso Davies who can just muscle their way past you, as he was doing on the edge of the area, beat two men and then just slides it past the keeper, it must be super demoralizing, I guess, for those kind of teams, just to, if you're already 2 or 3 nil down, you know, by, I don't know, half time as Dusseldorf were on Saturday night, then they know that they're just in for a really, really hard second half, and that can't be much fun. But it just shows, as you say, the difference in class there and how good of a machine Bayern are. And you wouldn't want to back against them, particularly because I guess the Bundesliga getting going early might actually mean that they're in much better shape by the time the Champions League comes back. Because of the fact they've started earlier, they've got themselves up into a decent rhythm. And actually, with the staggered starts that we're seeing, obviously Serie A, La Liga and the Premier League all confirming June restarts, depending on when the Champions League games get brought back in, you might still be in a bit of a pre-season mode by, you know, you might only be a few games in by the time the Champions League starts to come around. And then Bayern are suddenly coming into it with, you know, the wind in their sails and really kind of finely tuned as a team. And you'd struggle to back against them on that basis because they're just such a winning machine domestically. But if they can convert that with the added benefit of being much, much more equipped from a fitness perspective and from a discipline perspective, having racked up loads of wins in the league, then they're going to be a tough team to beat in Europe. They're already a tough team to beat anyway. They're already there every season, aren't they? It's just that since the Pep Guardiola era, they've just always seemed to stumble at the vital moment. But given that they're the team that are coming into this with the form and the fine tuning, you'd struggle to back against them, I think, against almost anyone, because they just look such a good unit at the moment. And with Lewandowski firing at will and just their sheer number of options, it's tough to see how they wouldn't go at least close, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm ready for another surprise, John, with a question that he wasn't expecting.
Yes!
So, Alphonso Davies, you mentioned him there, Jim. He seems to be quite good. Obviously, there was another North American player there quite recently in Christian Pulisic, who's since moved to Chelsea and not really played much since he got there. But I was on a show where we were talking about what might happen to the transfer window, and just arbitrarily it came up, who is the best player from North America right now? In your opinion, having seen both of them somewhat recently, do you think it's more Pulisic or do you think it's already Alphonso Davies?
Ooh, it's really tough. It's really tough judging American players, I think, anyway, because they have a huge amount of hope lumped on them early in their careers. And then I think unless they sort of become Lionel Messi immediately, then the interest sort of dies out. I think Alphonso Davies is a very, very good player. I also think Christian Pulisic is quite a good player as well, and perhaps has been a little bit overshadowed, not even overshadowed at Chelsea, I don't think, but has just gone a little bit under the radar. I think there's been a few games where he's been quite an important player for Frank Lampard's team in particular. And let's not forget, this is a guy who's got over 100 games at Dortmund under his belt. He's obviously a brilliant player. And so I think that when you're trying to determine the answer to this question, you have to sort of balance off the fact that maybe Pulisic has dropped out of the limelight somewhat, and also balance that off with the idea that Alphonso Davies is very much in the limelight at the moment. So I think it's actually a really, really tough question. I think probably go with Davies, because I think just looking at him now, his ceiling just seems so high. But I do think that it would be a disservice to just dismiss Pulisic out of question just on the basis of how much there's still to do with the development of Alphonso Davies.
Got it. So Davies is going to be better than Messi, and Christian Pulisic is crap. Got it. Okay.
What I really like about Davies is that he's kind of forced Bayern into a major rethink by being so good out of position. Like, it's rare that a youngster comes into the team and gets played in a defensive role. Normally you'd think of the comparison that springs to mind is Gareth Bale, who was a left back but then started playing further forward because they wanted to utilise his pace. Whereas Davies, obviously extremely fast. I think he's on record as being the fastest player in Europe this season. Might have made that up. Sure, I read that this weekend. And Bayern have decided to use him further back, where his pace can obviously cover, but he's a massive threat going forward. And John, that's meant that other players have had to play out of position as well. Alaba's played centre-back, Kimmich played centre-back, and this almost reshuffling the team to suit this teenager.
Yeah, it's remarkable, really. But I think, I mean, even just moving Alaba back into a central position has worked out really well, because they've almost got a playmaker in centre back. I mean, Alaba's has got a great ball on him. He can fire long crosses and balls into channels as well, and is a competent defender as well. And I think as well, when you are Bayern, your centre backs are going to be doing less work naturally than necessarily other centre-backs at other teams. And so, again, it just seems like another example of Hansi Flick making an intelligent switch, making it work for the team. And I think it's in the long run, it's worked out. But, yeah, you are right. It's a huge amount of pressure being put onto a youngster's shoulders, but he seems to be rising to that pressure really well.
Yeah, he's coping with it extraordinarily well. And I think the next section of the Let's Test John's Knowledge quiz. Kev, you had a question about newcomer perceptions.
Yes, obviously we've come to this Bundesliga season late, just finishing out kind of the tail end of the season since the restart. And I was just wondering what common misconceptions we might have. So, like, for example, we all think Schalke are terrible and David Wagner might not know what football is. Or we might think, for example, that Kai Havertz might be the best player in the entire world. The very hot takes, perhaps, but it would be somewhat understandable for people that would have started right at the restart to come away with those kind of takeaways. What do you think is kind of furthest from the truth that people might think is true based on what's happened since the restart?
Yeah, I've spent a couple of minutes this afternoon thinking about this, because I guess you guys are the best sort of test subjects for this. So there's just a few little questions that I had that I thought I would throw at you. So
one of them, turning the tables,
turning it around. Yeah.
Oh, we like have to pass a quiz.
Oh, I don't like this at all.
Well, it's not really a quiz; it's a survey, not more than anything.
I've got any homework.
Well, I guess I'm interested to hear, after Bayern and Dortmund, who you think are the biggest club in the Bundesliga.
Leverkusen.
You can interpret that as you want.
Easy.
Leverkusen. Okay. Any others?
I'd say Schalke, I think. I think the fact there's been so much narrative around how bad they are suggests to me that they should be doing an awful lot better than they are. Mm-hmm.
Jim?
I mean, yeah, I think you can tell from the general apathy around Schalke's kind of performances that it's so frustrating to so many people because they aren't being better. And I guess that kind of comes from the fact that they did well earlier in the season as well, as we've talked about previously, and then just have dropped away spectacularly. But I mean, surely Bayern are still the biggest team, right? They're the winning machine, certainly recently. I guess that's recency bias creeping in, because I know that they've not always been the best team in Germany, but they're the marketing machine. They're the guys with the most money, and they just seem to make it pay, unlike some teams in the Premier League, where they seem to misappropriate their financial power and not actually perform at the best level consistently.
Yeah, so Schalke are are generally seen as being the third biggest club in the Bundesliga, so well done. But that's both in terms of fans and also fan club members, and they're well up there with both Bayern and Dortmund in terms of their revenue as well. I mean, Bayern are leaps and bounds ahead of everyone else, but Schalke are the next big one. But I just wondered whether or not people necessarily thought about that. Another thing I thought was, we've not really talked much about RB Leipzig, and I don't think a lot of newcomers will realise just how disliked RB Leipzig are in the Bundesliga, because they are owned by Red Bull, and Red Bull do a huge amount of wangling to try and get around the rules regarding the 50+1 rules, so ownership rules and getting money into
they get around that club. To put you back on the spot after you put us on the spot after we put you on the spot.
I'm dizzy from all these tables being turned here.
I'm the turntables.
So the rule states that the ruling shares basically have to be owned by the fans or members of the club. So the 50+1 rule states that 50% of the shares have to be owned by the fans plus one share. So technically, the fans should always govern that. And the way that that's usually determined is by membership. So you pay some sort of membership fee, and you become a member, and then you have a say in the club. Now, RB Leipzig, the last time I checked, had something like 7 or 8 members, and they're all they're all in the Red Bull hierarchy somewhere. They pay a huge amount of money to be members, and so essentially what they've done is they still have their membership owning the majority share in the club, but there's only 7 people, and they're all Red Bull employees, I believe, and they're also you have to spend so much money that no one else joins to be a member, and so they've basically got around the rules that way.
That is insane. Just the way they're able to ring fence their superiority from I guess part of the reason, picking up on John's point about realizing whether just how hated they are, I think it's just a cultural difference, because we're so used to teams in England being taken over routinely by some people that are good, some people that are not so good.
And being celebrated, like right now with Newcastle.
Yeah, exactly that. I think because people seem to just care about the end result. And actually, if you look at like the Newcastle situation at the moment with the potential Saudi takeover, granted, the fans shouldn't be the moral arbiters of who takes over a club. But also, because it's such a common occurrence that all kinds of people, from a very, very wealthy background take over a club, sometimes to the benefit of that club, sometimes not. We don't seem as bothered about it, I guess. Not bothered, maybe that's the wrong term, but like, they just don't seem as outraged because of the fact that there's not this scheme set up to prevent it. It sounds like Red Bull have just done everything in their power to circumvent the rules and managed somehow to get away with it. Is there not like a Bundesliga kind of, from a Premier, a fit and proper person's test from a German perspective, that would stop them just ring fencing those shares, John? And just obviously, I mean, it sounds really, really obvious. If you can explain it to us like that in a couple of minutes, and it sounds like it sticks out like a sore thumb in the German kind of way. Have they not was it not raised at the time of how they were doing it? Or is it just kind of like money talks in the end and they just managed to push it through?
Also, to be fair, proper persons hasn't really worked in England.
I mean, yeah, in England, it's not worth the paper it's written on, let's be honest.
You just have to be a person, let alone fit and proper.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that... So it basically comes down to the fact that they thought that 50+1 would work, because it just sounds like you're never going to have any problems, because you're always going to have a fan-owned club. And obviously, part of the reason, I think, why so much of this is... So much of the German fan bases hate RB Leipzig is precisely because of this, because it's just such a flagrant breaking of the spirit of the rules, that and they've got away with it. But whether or not the league have ever really push them to stop doing what they're doing is another matter entirely. But there certainly was for a while a lot of wrangling about whether or not any rules had been broken, and the DFL came out and said they're not breaking any rules, so there's not really anything we can do about it, and that was the long and short of it.
Fair. I wonder if they just found a way around it.
I wonder if the difference is, going back to what Jim was saying about takeovers, is in England it tends to be big clubs already that then get bigger, whereas in Germany we've seen Red Bull come in at Leipzig and the chap at Hoffenheim and take clubs that were basically nothing or very new clubs and somersault them up the leagues incredibly quickly, get them into the Champions League and stuff. You think that's maybe the difference that fans of clubs that have done things the inverted comma right way resent the sheer money's been able to send these teams into the elite, sort of taking the shortcut?
Yeah, I think that's true. And I've been really interested actually with all the coronavirus stuff coming out to see sort of how German football survived, because it just seemed to me that so many German clubs were in such a good position because of the 50+1 rule that they might have a bit of a heads up in that regard. But it's apparently 13 of the clubs, I think, in the Bundesliga were saying that they were very, very close to failing. And so, yeah, it's a really interesting thing, because I'm someone who just tends towards the idea that a fan-owned model of football club ownership is a good one. But it's just so much complexified by the fact that the Bundesliga doesn't exist as a microcosm. You know, Bayern want to get rid of the 50+1 rule now, because if the 50+1 rule is there, it holds them back with respect to Europe. They've been very savvy, I think, in many respects, doing the right thing in terms of being able to develop their brand. And Uli Hoeneß very early on sort of marketed them really well and got them into a position where they could compete in Europe. But they, because no one can really invest in them in the same way that they can elsewhere in European football, just miles behind. And so they want to get rid of the rule. So the 50+1 rule I find funny, because it protected Bayern from ever being caught up by other clubs. But now it's got to a point where they're not competing against other clubs in the Bundesliga. They're competing against other clubs in Europe. So, yeah, it's a really fascinating aspect of German football that just doesn't really get covered very much.
It will be interesting to see how that plays out in the months and years to come, then, with the impacts of coronavirus on the financial situation. Will Bayern continue to be as far ahead of the pack? With that, then, I think we'll move on to the last part of the show, which is going to be previewing upcoming games. We're recording this on Sunday, so Leipzig do play Monday. We'll have to talk about that on the next show. And there's a midweek game as well, Werder Bremen against Eintracht Frankfurt. So that's the big game at the bottom. We'll touch on that in the next show as well. But Kev, it's your boys against Bayern at the weekend. And if you want to get in the Champions League, this is the sort of game where you're going to need to get a result.
Yeah, I know I said all those positive things about Bayern earlier, but I don't see how they stand a chance in this one. You know, they're going to be tired from all their winning, and maybe they just won't be able to show up in a meaningful way off of the back of what was an incredibly middling performance from Leverkusen. But they were just luring Bayern in. Look, you're in such great form. Oh, look, we're in terrible form. We lost midweek, and we just squeaked a win against Freiburg. We've got them right where we want them. Perhaps a little bit more seriously. Yeah, obviously it's of concern to have to play Bayern this late in the game, especially, as you say, with the Champions League spots as tight as they are. We've already mentioned Rasenball Sport Leipzig, which fortunately John informed us
not
doesn't
Red
even
Bull
mean
Leipzig.
Anything. And then obviously Jim's boys are ahead of us on goal difference. Oh, is goal difference the decider in the Bundesliga? Yeah,
but I think
genuinely
so, yeah.
Don't
oh,
know. I just assumed, because that's what
I assumed.
That's what's
we've,
looking.
We've not
at
needed to know that for a very long time.
Yeah, but I know some leagues don't play that game. So who knows? Beginners. But anyway, yeah, with level on points with Mönchengladbach, 1 point ahead of Leipzig, although Leipzig still have their game in hand. Yeah, this is kind of one that Leverkusen have to win, and since it's against Bayern, that's not typically what you'd think. You know what? Let's just keep annoying John. Do fans in general want anyone to beat Bayern, even if it hurts their cause, or are they more pragmatic and like Bayern beat us all the time, so they have to at least beat everyone else?
Before I answer that, I've just quickly searched. Apparently, the tiebreakers are applied in the following order: goal difference for the entire season, total goals scored for the entire season, and then head-to-head results, total points. As for what other clubs' fan bases feel about Bayern, I'm probably not the best person to ask. I'm not entirely sure what the case is in Germany itself. But one thing that I have noticed, actually, is that there does seem to be a sort of weird deference to Bayern, particularly in the German media, because I think for them, Bayern Munich is the sort of connection to the rest of European football, and I think they put a huge amount of trust in Bayern to actually perform well enough to be able to give a good account of German football in on the European stage. So that I think there is this sort of deference in amongst a lot of the German media, especially Germans, who I think are fans of other clubs. So I wonder whether or not that's a general phenomenon that you see around German football.
Gotcha.
That
well,
answer your question satisfactorily.
it did, and I'm still going Leverkusen, despite all evidence that you could throw at me. So I'm gonna go. Oh man, how many goals would they have to score to outscore Bayern? 3-2.
More 8-7, I think. I suppose the key question for this is: are you going to show your face on the pod next time? Because if you're not, then you probably lose. And if you are, then you're probably going to win.
That's a good point. Well, I think the key is actually watching the match, which I wasn't able to do midweek. So if I watch, we win 3-3, and we're going for 4-4 against Bayern this week.
Okay. So Augsburg are the last game on Sunday at home to Köln. Still working out how to say that in a Germanified. We're two teams next to each other-ish in the table, both just above the relegation zone, and both in pretty shoddy form since the restart. Augsburg have only won one against Schalke, which we've established doesn't really count because everyone beat Schalke now. And Cologne haven't beaten anyone since the restart. So, yeah, that one should be fun. But the weekend's action starts with another intrapod derby. And interestingly, because Jim picked Gladbach, because of the flowchart and complicated reasons, we've been using John as a sort of Freiburg fan. But on the first show, John said he followed sort of both clubs. So have we pushed you into Freiburg fandom further?
Yeah, interesting, actually. It's just something that I've noticed recently, that I actually care more about Freiburg games than Gladbach games, which I don't really understand, because it's never been a better time to be a Gladbach fan, really. They've got a great coach, they've got a great assistant manager, they're playing fun football, they've got an incredible team with exciting young players who they've picked up from around Europe.
And this Freiburg is the time you've decided to desert them.
Yeah, exactly. And Freiburg play like Burnley, so yeah.
Well, if there's any explanation, I don't know. Who wouldn't want to support a team that plays like Burnley? So no split loyalties for this one. Will it be Freiburg that you're cheering on?
Yeah, I think I'm wanting Freiburg to win this one. But Gladbach are playing exceptionally well at the moment. It could be an interesting one. I think Freiburg, again, are going to play hard to break down. It'll just depend on the day what happens. But I would say that Gladbach, that the way they play is sort of very positionally motivated. So they will be very good at stretching the structure of Freiburg. So I suspect Gladbach will win probably 2-0.
Well, you're on record now. So if you try and roll back and disown Freiburg at any point, we'll just have to dig up this recording. Jim, what do you expect about this one? Obviously, very impressed by Gladbach this weekend, but they have shown that they can be a little bit inconsistent.
Yeah, I don't think, to John's point, I don't think Gladbach are keeping a clean sheet. I find that very, very difficult to believe based on their recent exploits. So I do think there'll be probably a little bit too much, especially with the lack of home advantage, which we've spoken about, that being a little bit more of a leveler behind closed doors. It's certainly not the advantage that it once was. I think that's pretty clear now. Albeit the degree to which it's affected is still up for debate. I think the corresponding fixture earlier on in the season was 4-2 to Gladbach. So that sounds kind of Gladbach-esque, I guess, high scoring game where they don't keep a clean sheet. So let's go 3-1 for Gladbach on Friday night to kick things off.
Certainly going to be one of the most exciting games of the weekend, hopefully. I think we're coming towards the end of the show now. So Kev, to celebrate your triumphant return, you want to tell everyone how to subscribe, etc., because I don't think I did a very good job on last show.
You did fine. Acast, Spotify, iTunes, go find us, follow us, or subscribe to us. You said that by Googling us, you can find us pretty easily, but I realized that the handle is Bundesliga Pod, and when we shoot it out, the prefix is B4B, so I don't even know if searching Bundesliga for Beginners will find you on the show. That sounds like a thing I need to sort out. But anyway, yeah, follow us on all those things, and of course, EPL Roundtable and EPL Index, from whence this show is delivered.
Yeah, and you can get the podcast on Twitter as well, at Bundesliga Pod. Please do get in touch with any questions, comments, feedback, etc. We're still quite new to this, we're only a few episodes in, and we are winging it to an extent. So any ideas as to how we can make things better, please don't be afraid to tell us. No offence will be taken whatsoever. You can also get us individually on Twitter. I'm at Jamie Smith Sports. Kev is at Kevrov. Jim is Jim Knight Tweets. And John is John_McKenzie. Normally, we try and do a midweek show, but looking at the fixtures of the game on Wednesday, and it's going to be tricky to get things in. So we've previewed the big games from the weekend on the end of this show. Hopefully, you can wait a week for the next one. We'll try and record Sunday, and that should be out within a few hours of the match week ending. So, yeah, don't be too upset about that. I'm sure you'll be fine. But yeah, that's our show. This has been Bundesliga for Beginners. I've been Jamie Smith, and we'll catch you next time. Goodbye. 99 red balloons floating in the summer sky. Panic bears, it's red alert. There's something here from somewhere else. The war machine. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.